broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is hour two of two. This is the broadcast for December the 17th in the year of our Lord, 2020. Our goal to promote God, family, and country, and to protect life, liberty, and property, and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. We got a row to hoe, I'll tell you that right now. But Americans are always up for the challenge. We've been in tight spots before, so we can deal with that. But we've got to use the checks and balances of the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. We've got to understand that we, the people, have a role to play, and we better get engaged, and we better get engaged now. Mr. Pete Sepp, president of National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, with us. Welcome back, and a hearty Merry Christmas to you and your family, sir.
Well, Merry Christmas to you as well. Thank you.
All right. I know this is not really on topic for Pete Sepp and the NTU from a tax point of view, but it is the elephant in the room. What do you think of all these election challenges and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? You know, I believe the president has a right to a redress of grievance, and as long as he has opportunities to have due process of law and he feels like things have been wronged or there's criminal activity committed, et cetera, et cetera, you know, they make it sound like he's just a sore loser. But I think if there really is vote fraud, then the republic's at stake, sir.
Well, ages ago, I should relate this to you, that I worked at a board of elections for a county-level agency summers while I was in college, and I remember that there were a number of procedures that required both Democrats and Republicans to be in the room when ballots were counted. There were always spoiled ballots. There were some accusations by candidates that they'd been defrauded of their victory because of improper election procedures, and challenges would be made, and administrative hearings would be held. Sometimes court cases would be brought. So my point here is that it's generally a normal process for someone somewhere to challenge the results of an election and ask for things like recounts and verifications. And if they don't get that, they resort to other proceedings. This should not be a surprise to us that Donald Trump and his team are now doing the same thing in multiple states. Do I think that it will change the results? Probably not, based on my experience in that small to medium-sized election agency. But that's my opinion at this point.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't want to really go on that for a long time, but I do want people to respond to this because, sadly, that, along with the release of the vaccines, is just taking all the oxygen out of the room for any other discussions. Sadly so, because there's so many things that need to be done relating to the American people, and that's what we're all about on this program, and that's what the National Taxpayers Union, NTU, NTU.org is all about as well. You know, these things matter, and we should keep an eye on those balls. Don't misunderstand me. But there are things in our lives that matter. The economy, pardon the pun, being top billing among them for many of us who need to stay alive, financially speaking, during the pandemic. And therefore, Brandon Arnold for NTU.org writes an incredible article that I think relates big time right now. And it's something that we need to keep our eye on this ball, too. Headline: NTU, that's the National Taxpayers Union, urges passage of COVID-19 relief legislation. They urge the passage of that. Brandon Arnold with the details, Pete.
Yes, this is called the Emergency Coronavirus Relief Act of 2020. Now, I'll preference the remarks here by saying this is not an ideal situation in which we find ourselves as a nation or legislatively. What we're trying to do here is win the best possible protections for taxpayers if Congress and the White House go ahead with yet another legislative relief package for COVID-19, something like the CARES Act that was originally passed back in March of this year, but nothing like, we hope, the HEROES Act, which was a $2.2 trillion bill. You know, this is where we're finding ourselves, having to talk to Congress and the White House and say, look, if you're going to move forward with legislation, taxpayers deserve first consideration here. You can't throw trillions of dollars at this problem without accountability. And I think this bill, the Emergency Coronavirus Relief Act, is a decent deal. It still has flaws in it, but we're talking about a bill that now has a price tag of less than half of what the HEROES Act did, Nancy Pelosi's solution to the problem. Okay, that's a could-be-worse situation. Does the bill have riders on it that we would like to see go away? Yes, there's industry-specific relief that I think would be better served if we just had things like more tax relief and more loans. But tax relief and loans are going to be part of this package, and that's important for taxpayers to recognize, as opposed to outright federal aid or bailouts. We still have problems with bailouts in this bill for the U.S. Postal Service and for the Essential Air Service program. Not necessary. We might be able to deal those out of the package. But here again, the point is, we've got to be in the room while this is happening so that taxpayers at least have a fighting chance to hold on to more of their own money, and we're not loading more debt onto the backs of future taxpayers.
But and let's be very clear. Let's be very clear about this too, Pete. When you say that we should pass this, we're not really wanting to spend a bunch of money. Okay. We're not really kind of socialist idea that we just say, hey, government, spend our way out of this thing. That's not our normal viewpoint. However, when the government shuts down everything and people can't make a living, you know, you've created to some degree, you know, whether we can debate on the other side of this, if that's justifiable or not. But when you create this situation where people don't have a way forward because they don't have economic freedom, then something has to be done is the point. And so what we're saying is, hey, the ideal is not to do it at all. But living in the real, there has to be a prioritization somewhere. And if they're going to do it, we either need to sit at the table and help prioritize, or we just simply get sidelined, which I believe does no good. And so that's really, and I highlight that, Pete, because I want people to understand the kind of the ramp up to this and the perspective and the reality here. The ideal is to not be involved in this situation at all. The real is where we're at, though, and we need to be at the table to make sure that we don't get fleeced along the way, right?
Yeah, exactly. And politically, this is the smartest move we can make at this time. That's the thing. Nancy Pelosi and the ultra-liberal left wing is already complaining. They're saying that this is not enough money. This is not going to work. We need to have more bailouts. We need to have more Green New Deal elements because that somehow will help our economy recover. And we both know that's not going to happen. That's going to be making matters worse. The point is, this bill was proposed by what's called the Problem Solvers Caucus in Congress, Democrats and Republicans who are interested in finding pragmatic solutions to public policy problems. Well, they're not always on target, but here the smart move is to endorse this bill and say it's not perfect. This is not an ideal situation, but by doing that, we are creating a wedge between some Democrats who want to do something that's responsible and the ultra-left wing with AOC and Nancy Pelosi and the rest. I think that what we're going to wind up with here is something that we can at least live with.
All right, so let me highlight even further kind of the direction. The NTU manages to say a lot in very few words, but let me give you this reality check, ladies and gentlemen. About what NTU, Pete Sepp, and others are saying. That is this. Listen carefully. In lame duck Congress, Congress should avoid shutdown and pass targeted COVID relief. There's a whole mouthful of reality checks in that one phrase, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about lame duck, number one. So remember, those people who pass things, if you're not very careful, have no accountability, a lot of them, right? Okay, secondly, you get a situation where we're about to shut down the government like we always do at Christmas. Why they leave it till Christmas, by the way, is not an accident. It happens every year, all the time. Okay, so let's not shut down the government. Let's move past that. But, and then they really give, in my opinion, the reality check here. The COVID relief has to happen because the government's taking actions forcing it to happen. Okay, we can debate that all day long, but that's where we really are in reality. But then you say pass targeted COVID relief. That's the key to the discussion, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you really have hit the key point too, Sam, that government created this mess. Government is going to have to help clean it up. And the way to help clean it up is to provide that targeted temporary relief for businesses that have been shut down by government's own devices and get the economy back on its feet so we can transition into what will amount to a new normal. The new normal could go one of two ways. It could go the way of AOC and Nancy Pelosi and Elizabeth Warren and the radical wing of the Democratic Party with more government control, Green New Deal, economic manipulation, higher taxes, more regulation.
And that train will pick up speed with Biden asleep at the controls, huh?
That's right. That is exactly right. Biden will give the congressional Democrats on the radical side a free hand unless we, again, drive that wedge between that radical wing and the more moderate wing of their party so that we can do something, again, that is targeted and temporary and will allow us, the free market, pro-liberty people, to make our case.
Amen to that. Pete Sepp, stay there, my friend. We got a whole lot to cover. I want to talk about the defense bill and a bunch of other things. You got to keep an eye on this ball, ladies and gentlemen. I know everybody wants to talk about the new vaccines rolling out and whether Donald's going to, you know, go away or stay. And I get all that. But it's Christmas. And usually, financially, they beat us up at Christmas. So you got to watch and be vigilant, folks. NTU.org in seconds.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Live and on your radio, ladies and gentlemen, Pete Sepp with us, president of NTU, National Taxpayers Union. We've been talking about lowering taxes for 25 years, ladies and gentlemen. And I know we got a row to hoe. But you know what? Good people are doing good things, ladies and gentlemen, is the point. And you need to know about it. There are organizations that are making a solid difference. And even though we feel like, you know, sometimes our backs are against the wall or we're not making progress and everything else, I know it's frustrating and disappointing and discouraging, but don't let them talk you into apathy. The truth is, ladies and gentlemen, we are making a difference. And even though things aren't as, you know, what do you want to say, squared away as we would like might be the best way to say it. The fact is, just imagine if NTU wasn't there. Just imagine if good citizens behind the scenes that don't get near enough credit oftentimes, just imagine if they weren't fighting to lower taxes literally every day. Just imagine how abusive it would be, Pete. I don't even want to think about it. I might not even be able to buy Christmas presents, for crying out loud.
Yes, unfortunately, that's how we often have to think of ourselves, is sort of stemming the tide, not only of red ink, but bad proposals for higher taxes and more regulation. We often have to simply stop bad things from happening rather than make good things happen. But that's the way the job is, and we celebrate the victories even as we learn from the defeats.
Ladies and gentlemen, NTU, National Taxpayers Union, is the voice of America's taxpayers, mobilizing elected officials and citizens on behalf of tax relief and reform. What a blessing that is. That's almost a Christmas gift in and of itself, that they exist and they work so hard, ladies and gentlemen. Let's talk about this headline here, Pete. I think this is really important to discuss as well. Right now, there's a defense bill. Lawmakers should reject $740 billion defense bill. You want to respond to that one?
Yes, unfortunately, the Pentagon is not immune to waste, fraud, and abuse of tax dollars. In fact, it is one of the biggest violators. And people say, well, what price our national security? We should just swallow the bitter pill, spend as much as possible, and that will make us safer. Well, that's not always the case. And every dollar of defense money that is wasted or put toward a low priority item in the budget actually harms our national security. And so that's why we eye the defense budget as critically as we do all of the domestic expenditures. It matters more, in fact, when it comes to national security spending. And the latest version of the defense policy bill, also called the National Defense Authorization Act, has a few bright spots to it, some wins that we've been actually trying to secure for quite a number of years. And it starts with something called the Taxpayers' Right to Know Act. Believe it or not, it is very difficult to put an exact number on program performance and reform opportunities when it comes to Pentagon spending and spending throughout the federal government. What it's going to do, this act, is finally complete a years-long effort on the first ever comprehensive federal program inventory.
Hold on, stop. Say that again, because in my opinion, this is landmark good news, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir. Say it again.
This is to complete the first ever federal program inventory. In other words, to finally know how many programs, how many agencies, how many bureaus are administering federal tax dollars, what they're spending it on, where it's going, and how we can improve it. Believe it or not, that is something that the federal government has never undertaken. We've done it in bits and pieces, parts of the government. We've tried to do it for the overall federal government and have failed. Taxpayers have a right to know what they're paying for. Simple as that. And that's what this act is finally going to achieve. Once we know where all the programs are, what they are, and what they're spending money on, we can finally begin the task of paring those programs back to their constitutional boundaries.
Wow, that is significant, sir. And I don't think anybody's even hearing anything about this at all, are they?
No, they aren't. And I'd like to point out that this is a bipartisan effort. Jim Cooper, Democrat from Tennessee, Tim Walberg, Republican of Michigan, James Comer, Republican of Kentucky. This is now included in the House's version of the National Defense Authorization Act. And so we're thrilled that this is going to likely make it to final passage and get signed into law.
And let me explain the reasoning behind this. You know what? We reject it and think that we shouldn't spend this kind of money at all. However, If they're going to spend it, let's put at least get some good things in it that can try to give us the ability, give us the tools necessary to start paring things down and cutting things back. The real questions in the National Defense Authorization Bill relate to things like this. Do we want a nation build? Or do we want to just have national defense? You know, what do we want to do with our time and our dollars and our expenditures? And that's where, in my opinion, we need a lot of people that are not so hawkish for these discussions. We need to follow the Prince of Peace here and kind of back off a bit and say, hey, you know what? We need to defend America. We all agree. But what does that mean? And how much does that cost to do effectively? And when are we undermining the effort, maybe? And as George Washington, one of the greatest generals ever known, said, you know, hey, avoid those foreign entanglements. When are we using that money to engage in foreign entanglements that eventually come back and become kind of the next, yesteryear's discussions and interventions and involvements become futuristic problems that we face? And I think these discussions need to be out on the table, transparent, and discussed in reality, not just hammered through, Pete.
Yes, I'd agree with that. And I think we also need to recognize that national security also depends on our economic security. The fact is, one of the biggest strengths we have to deter foes and aggressors is that we have a tremendously well-educated population with the freedom to innovate, with tax burdens that get too high but are a little more stable than they are in other countries, with a little less regulation than countries in Europe or the socialist world experience. The fact that we have that kind of freedom to innovate, to create jobs, to build an economy that is the envy of many other nations in the world is something that we can use as a security asset. And that means we need to watch how much money government consumes at all levels and for all purposes.
There's a lot going on. Do you think that this lame duck session will give us a break this Christmas, or do you think they're just going to be working on things behind the scenes? The government shutdown always worries me, because usually what happens is they just hammer through everything they couldn't get through all year long in those end game discussions, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. And of course, funding agreements for the current fiscal year ran out on December 11th. So that was last week, and Congress passed a temporary one-week extension going through December 18th to try and hammer out a bill for the rest of this current fiscal year to fund the federal government. Well, that deadline is now barely a day away as we're speaking here. Congress can either punt again and give themselves more time to negotiate something, or they can finally hammer out the agreement and rush it through. I happen to think that a little more time would be a better thing because with that, taxpayers get the chance to make the case if they say, well, we have to do this tonight, folks, so let's just give everybody everything they want on their wish list and we'll call it a day. That would probably be a mistake.
Well, and I don't understand why somebody doesn't say, listen, every year this comes up, we punt, play around, threaten shutdown, do all this stuff. Why don't they just change the date of this budgetary annual reality and say, look, we're going to deal with it January 27th or whatever the number be, February 10th, I don't know what. But enough to say, look, let's get back, let's get the fresh people in place, let's literally take action now and do so in a organized, transparent way. Let's not put ourselves under pressure or put ourselves in a compromising position from the get-go. I mean, that would be so easy to do, Pete. How dumb am I, huh?
It certainly would. Not dumb at all, actually. And I think Congress does need to consider how to prioritize and arrange its deadlines so that we'll get better outcomes for taxpayers.
If you kicked it into the start of the next year, for example, like I'm saying, you would have fresh people there after all the inauguration and everything else. You'd have time to research it and get a handle on it. You would have nobody in lame ducks. You would have, I mean, doesn't it make a whole lot more sense?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Pete Sepp with us, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a lot to cover. This is great. Hang tight. NTU.org, that's the National Taxpayers Union. Not only are they involved on the national and the global level in partnership with others, but they're on the local level for you as well.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
A North Carolina police officer was killed in a Friday morning shootout near a car wash. The shooting happened around 3:30 a.m. in Belmont, North Carolina. Police said the shooting happened after Mount Holly police officers confronted an armed suspect while responding to a breaking and entering call. 25-year-old Mount Holly officer Tyler Herndon was taken to the hospital where he later died. The suspect, identified as 24-year-old Joshua Funk, was also shot but only suffered minor injuries. Funk has been taken into custody and charged with first-degree murder. At least three people have died as a strong snowstorm that's left over 60 million people under winter weather alerts slams the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. The National Weather Service warned the storm would cause major travel disruptions and power outages while dumping heavy snow. There were some 200 vehicle crashes in Virginia Wednesday. Brooklyn, New York is reporting 6.5 feet of snow overnight. Boston is expecting a foot of snow today. USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule. Changing the world, one life at a time.
The product that you have given me here is, as far as I'm concerned, sent to me from heaven. I love it a great deal. It's hard to find anything that's real nowadays. I enjoy it immensely. It's making my life so much better. I feel so much better. And during this pandemic, I have no worries whatsoever. My immune system has got to be at a top-notch level. I don't seem to get colds or anything. I don't know what getting sick is anymore. This is so cool.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or by going to balanceofnature.com and make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
Lawmakers want to remove a congressman from the House Intelligence Committee after he was infiltrated by the Chinese Communist government. USA Radio News, Dan Naraki.
A group of Republican lawmakers have sent House Speaker Nancy Pelosi a letter urging her to remove California Congressman Eric Swalwell from the House Intelligence Committee. The 17 GOP House members wrote that Swalwell's interactions with an alleged Chinese spy are a national security risk to a committee that handles information critical to national defense. Representative Chris Stewart says it should come as no surprise that members of Congress are targets for infiltration by the Chinese. The Utah Republican, who also sits on the House Intelligence Committee, tells Fox News that Representative Swalwell should have known better.
I think that's the primary failure here is, look, we start with the presumption that China is going to target us. They're going to try to exploit and develop relationships with us. And then you look at the commonsensical kind of environment we're in and then say, does this person raise red flags? She certainly did. And I think that's where Mr. Swalwell has some questions that he absolutely has to answer.
From the USA Radio News Ohio Bureau, I'm Dan Naraki.
Pete Sapp, president of National Taxpayers Union, riding shotgun on the show today, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about solutions. We're talking about how lawmakers should reject the $740 billion defense bill. But you know what? We're now getting the opportunity to really analyze what is good and what is bad in these bills. Breakdowns of budgetary realities like never before. That is good news. And there's a new House bill being proposed that would reform an outdated, expensive court record system, Pete. This is one example, right?
Yes, it is. It's called the Open Courts Act of 2020, H.R. 8235. There's currently a system for access to electronic court records called PACER. It's a government acronym that has really earned a lot of bipartisan scorn lately because it's highly inefficient, costs a lot, very slow. Well, this bill would reform it. It would allow the public to have free access to electronic court records. It would reduce fees in some places, increase them in others, but by and large, it would provide a less expensive pro-taxpayer way of allowing citizens to access court records more quickly and at an affordable out-of-pocket price. And why this is important, of course, well, it's a number of reasons. Not only are we talking about some modest taxpayer savings here, but we're also talking about taxpayers being able to get to records that could more efficiently help them in some of their own lawsuits against government. And the fact is, we have to hold government accountable through all branches of government, the legislative, executive, as well as the judicial branch. And taxpayers traditionally have had the least access to the judicial branch in trying to pursue remedies. Very costly to hire attorneys, very difficult to understand all the rules of civil procedure. This will make it just a little bit easier, clear one of those hurdles for taxpayers having access to court to enforce some of their rights.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen, it's amazing what people are working on that you don't get to hear about, huh? Think about that. All right, we need to reform that sucker. I'll tell you that right now. Next headline that I find interesting, and we're going to talk about this, three surprising facts about international trade and manufacturing. Brian Riley writes this article on NTU, that's the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, three surprising facts about international trade. And while you gear up for that one, Pete Sepp, it's also interesting to note that right now, the United States Treasury Department has just branded Vietnam and Switzerland as currency manipulators, while putting China and nine other countries on a watch list in an annual report designed to halt countries from manipulating their currencies for unfair trade advantages, sir. These two go together.
Yeah, they certainly do, because if we're going to have a good, solid trade system that benefits both the United States and other nations in which we engage in trade, we need to have ground rules that are enforceable, that are transparent, and that hold countries accountable for their behavior. That doesn't mean we have to immediately resort to trade wars, retaliatory tariffs. Those are a bad idea, and I know we've had this discussion before. There's a difference between figuring out a system for funding the federal government that might be based on moderate tariffs versus engaging in trade wars and using tariffs as a tool to do that. Totally different things. One is a far, far better idea than the other if you're trying to design a federal government that is limited and within its constitutional boundaries.
One shields the American taxpayer from direct taxation, which is a blessing the founders understood well. And it also basically allows us to then appropriately punish bad actors who are manipulating things for their political and economic advantage, sir. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And when you talk about these different facts involved here, you begin to understand Trump has been right on this all along, regardless of the derision he takes.
Yeah, there are many, many instances where we need to have a trade policy that's smart, one that does not rely on trade wars, but rather relies on accountability. And when you take a look at these three surprising facts, for example, from 2010 to 2019, net U.S. manufacturing employment has increased by almost 1.4 million.
Now, this that is amazing when you think about that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I mean, that's incredible performance. And many would have you believe that, because of international trade, net manufacturing employment has fallen. That's actually not the case. And I would, of course, give some credit to the enactment of smart tax policies beginning in 2017 for part of that net U.S. manufacturing employment rise. It's not just due to trade. It's due to good tax policy, good regulatory policy, the confidence that was instilled in American business after the Obama era of hyper-regulation and threats to overtax. So that's a lesson to be learned. They all tend to go hand in hand. If they're made to work together, we can actually increase employment in areas where we desire them to increase.
And you would think with the COVID, we talk about the economic realities and difficulties with that, and that's why we, you know, really talk about targeted COVID relief. But this is an example where just imagine if we didn't have gains in this. And you would think from the coronavirus, especially internationally, that things would be just south all the way, you know, a train going south 100 mile an hour kind of thing. It isn't the case because of policies that are in place. And what we need to do is vet those policies so we understand them and pursue continued direction in that in those policies to even make it more so, right?
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, the incoming Biden administration will have some interesting choices to make on trade policy. There's going to be, for example, the renewal of what's called Trade Promotion Authority. That allows presidents to fast-track negotiations over trade agreements. Ronald Reagan sought it and was able to use a similar authority. Barack Obama sought it. He got it. And some said that was for the worse. We have to be careful about giving the executive branch too much of that authority. But the point is, the Biden administration, if it comes to Washington in January and starts saying, well, we need to attach all kinds of new conditions to trade agreements, environmental goals like the Green New Deal. We won't trade with anyone until they sign on to all of the radical principles of the Green New Deal. That would be the wrong direction. That's taking trade in a direction that's not going to be productive for the United States or any of its trading partners. We're supposed to be tearing down barriers, not putting up more regulatory barriers and conditions.
One thing that relates to this, and the COVID, as sad as circumstances are relating to this, I really think that we can do something if we're careful, if we're wise, if we're clear about our attempts here. That is this. Top 1% saw wages increase. They say saw wages soar 160% since 1979. And then they go on and have this big explanation in USA Today. They say the rich are getting richer. They're getting there faster than the rest of America's workers. And then they say, you know, wages barely rose 8-point-something% or whatever for the bottom 90%, et cetera. And they go on and on and on. However, as we come out of the coronavirus difficulty and as we work on the environment and as we work on tax reform and as we work on international relationships and tariffs and which countries are being bad actors and everything else, if we're wise and we really press our legislative bodies and we support National Taxpayers Union and put together cogent research that can support appropriate direction, we can economically have a real opportunity to make a difference here if we seize the day, Pete.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we need to begin by telling the truth about some of these laws that have been passed on behalf of taxpayers that have done an excellent job of boosting our economy. You know, we talk about the gap between rich and poor. Well, just released data that we analyzed from the IRS shows that after passage of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, the big tax cut law, or modest one in my opinion, that gets all this blame for widening the gap between rich and poor, it's just not true. The latest data for tax year 2018 shows that the share of federal personal income tax paid by the top 1% is going up, not down.
Ladies and gentlemen, did you know there was so much good news before Christmas? You didn't hear about it from your mainstream naysayers, did you? Ladies and gentlemen, our prayers and our actions are with the Constitutional Republic known as the United States of America, NTU.org, one of the leaders in making sure we have a seat at the table. Hang tight.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Congress is getting this reality check. I don't know if you are. Listen up. The National Restaurant Association issued a bleak warning in a letter to congressional leaders on Monday saying that with nearly one in six restaurants completely closed, the restaurant industry will crumble if it doesn't get any relief. For nearly 9 months, restaurants, by the way, that's our nation's second largest private sector employer. They've been in a free fall and been struggling with capacity limits, etc. They say due to the coronavirus pandemic, but I really say due to government mandates. Wrote Sean Kennedy, he's the association's vice president for public affairs. Now, this is serious. This is not a joke. This morning we sent a letter to Congress, he says, drawing unique attention to the restaurant industry and what we have to have to survive this pandemic. This association also found out that 87% of full-service restaurants reported an average 36% drop in sales revenue. That number is huge. I don't see how they can even survive it. And the answer is, at least according to this association, and some might say, oh, they're just asking for, you know, a handout. They're, you know, whatever. They're fine. I don't think so. Okay. When you shut down by government mandate and or severely curtail what these people can do, hey, you're in serious, serious trouble if you're not careful. Again, this is why you guys are urging the passage of this act, is that we are at a critical juncture. These businesses may never come back. Most of American business, at least when it comes to average wages for you and I and everybody else, depends on small business. That's at the core of this discussion, and I don't think the American people really understand the gravity here, Pete.
You know, there are many instances where destroyed businesses will never be able to come back. I mean, we have a very dynamic small business environment in this country under the best of conditions. Businesses are created and phased out or transitioned all the time. That's what makes our economy so vibrant. But when government swoops in and imposes artificial restrictions on the way businesses can operate, that's tampering with the natural process called Schumpeter's Law of creative destruction. And we are going to pay a dear price for this, not only in terms of crushed entrepreneurial spirit, not only in terms of lost employment opportunities, but also in terms, frankly, of the very practical lost revenues. You know, governments need to realize that when they are depressing business activity by shutting them down, they're also depriving themselves of profit taxes and property taxes. Oh, they may try to act like the situation is normal there and just keep sending these businesses property tax bills to pay, but they can't pay them. And that reality is going to hit very soon unless governments get smarter with their policies. I mean, here I am in Montgomery County, Maryland, talking to you just a couple of days ago. My county council gave the okay to an executive order that's going to ban indoor dining in the county again, barely a few months after dining started to get back to normal here. Well, it's also, as I talk to you, 32 degrees outside. How in the world is any business going to offer outdoor dining under conditions like that? The answer is they can't really do it very conveniently. And so governments need to recognize the problems they are creating by these shutdowns. And whether you support them or not, it is their responsibility to try and help the businesses that their laws are hurting.
And let me give you an example to make the point. In the Constitution, government has the ability to obtain land in states based on a very unique list of guidelines. The government can ask for land for certain purposes. But even in a given state, what they've got to do is identify a piece of property. They got to get the state's permission, and then they got to provide just compensation for that land, even so. And so that guideline really is what we're talking about here. If you're going to take away the profitability and or the ability to make a profit or whatever you want to say by mandate, then you've got to compensate in the meantime. Now, I don't like that because it, to me, smacks of socialism. But at the same time, you know, if we're going to allow one, we've got to allow the other. And what we should probably do is back off and say, how can we open up the economy and not let the COVID destroy everybody? And how do we get a balance? You know, for example, if you drive 75 miles an hour on the road, a lot of people die. I don't know what it is. It's like 40,000 people a year die due to road accidents and stuff like that. If you slowed everybody down to 25 there, Pete, instead of 70 on the freeway, nobody would really die comparatively, maybe one or two, but the number would go down big time. It's an acceptable risk that we're taking by allowing people to drive that fast. And I say the same thing's true with the corona here. We should mitigate, to the best of our ability, the negative effects, but we got to do that across the board, not just in a panic with laser-like vision on shutting everybody down. We've got to somehow come back and talk about acceptable risks and reality in society. Otherwise, you can't ever even walk across the street, Pete.
And evidence-based policymaking here. You know, we constantly hear that refrain in response to so many of the Trump administration's executive orders. Oh, these aren't based on science or evidence. Well, we need to take that principle to heart when it comes to some of government's responses to this crisis. Again, some folks may support these total lockdowns or the partial lockdowns, judging that, look, the risks aren't worth it. Okay, but let's weigh those risks and let's consider the economic impacts and the fallout down the line that we're going to experience here. The kids who've been deprived of a full-scale educational experience, you know, that's going to have a ripple effect for years. And taxpayers are involved in these calculations, too. What kind of remedial education is going to be necessary after this pandemic is finally over and the good Lord is going to find a way for us to make sure it is over? And what happens? How are school districts going to spend the money for that kind of remedial education? Where are they going to do it? Those are important fiscal questions that we really haven't been able to consider because we're in this emergency mindset.
Well, and we also have situations where a lot of people are committing suicide because they're isolated, they're alone. A lot of people have other health conditions and health problems and aren't getting treated, and people are dying as a result of the lack of ability to get you know, some of the operations and or surgeries and or tests that are necessary because of this. You know, we really need to open up our minds to appropriate discussions rather than attacking on each side of the aisle. Oh, Trump's bad because of this, or oh, you know, Biden because of that. And we need to step back a minute and say, let's quit playing the blame game. Let's talk about what we can best do in this situation. How do we mitigate the risks everywhere and create a balance that's acceptable? And that's really what we need to be focusing on. And I think that's what NTU does. How can we use our money wisely and carefully? We get that taxes are necessary. But how do we come up with a plan that can benefit us all? And I really think that's what we need to be talking about. And if we could get a lot of the egos out of the way, maybe we could give that for Christmas, huh, Pete?
Quite possibly. And you raise a very important point here, Sam, that we've been talking a lot about federal legislation, federal responses and rulemakings and federal court rulings and federal court access. a lot of this is happening at the local level where folks could easily organize, even in this pandemic era, to form local taxpayer groups that would say to the school district, hey, have you considered all the factors here in your COVID-19 response? Have you thought about the issue like remedial education? Have you thought about places that you've not had to spend money on going to the pandemic and shifting that into additional expenditures that might be needed in response to the pandemic? Have you thought about how to keep property tax burdens low for businesses as well as individuals so we can all recover as the economy gets back on its feet? Because a recovering economy is a government treasury's best friend. If nobody's making money and nobody's spending money, governments don't get money either.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a lot of work to do in America. And as Pete wisely points out, a lot of it can be done in your state, in your county, in your city, at the local level. And that's really where I think most of the impacts can be made. Instead of letting things trickle down the way we think, we need to think local is the highest point. Let them trickle down to the furthest government from us, the feds. We can do that if we think locally and act responsibly. That's for sure. Another quick headline to get your take on, believe it or not. Bitcoin breaks $21,000 after reaching all-time high of 20 grand. I mean, Bitcoin's soaring out of control in relation to this reality. That's scary, Pete.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to say about people's confidence in the future of our economy and in the soundness of currencies like the U.S. dollar. We ignore that at our own peril, and we need to realize that, okay, alternative forms of currency may be the choice for many people. We shouldn't stand in the way of that, but we need to figure out if people are flocking to those types of currencies because they're losing faith in their own governments and various central banking entities. If that's the case, then we need to step back and ask questions about why that's happening. Is it overtaxation, overregulation, overspending, all of the above? Those are very important questions to ask and get answered before we have some other crisis on our hands.
And I'm kind of a simpleton, Pete. I think one of the things that we really need to do, a lot of people want to, you know, take a an axe to this thing. I think a lot of times it's more like in a wood shop, you use a plane and you take off a teeny bit at a time and you adjust here and you adjust there and you kind of look at the results and analyze. And I think one of the things that we really need to understand, it's kind of like an equalizer in audio. You know, the more you tweak the audio, the worse it sounds, believe it or not. Small, teeny changes make the most difference. And I think that's what we really need to talk about here, too. We don't need massive change. What we need to do is slow, appropriate reform with a compass on the goal of less taxes, more liberty, vibrant economy, free market principles. And we should use these fundamental guides to slowly but surely carve changes for success. I think knee-jerk reactions are dangerous. I think panics are bad for the people. I think the appropriate crafting towards our goal really makes the most difference. And NTU is poised to help us all do that from top to bottom, Pete.
Well, we are ready to make that contribution in 2021. There are many opportunities next year. Many people think, oh, it's nothing but threats. We're going to have to hunker down and defend ourselves. Well, there are some threats. But again, there are opportunities that taxpayers can pursue from the local level on up. And we're here to help folks do that.
There you have it, Pete. Merry Christmas to you and your family and the whole NTU team. Thank you, sir.
Merry Christmas. Take care.
Godspeed. There he goes. Pete Sepp doing a phenomenal job. Ladies and gentlemen, we have people like that in America working every single day to improve the economy, to improve liberty, to focus on what we can do to make these changes. I'm talking about consistent efforts, incremental change towards the goal of free markets, of accountability, of transparency. I mean, I could go on, as you all know. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. Archives at lovingliberty.net. Spread the word. LibertyRoundtable.com. Donate liberally today, would you please? For Sam, Pete, and many others, We the people can and will restore America. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States.